Let me go here for a minute. I was thinking about this the other day, and it really kind of, in life in general, a lot of times we have conflicts, right? I mean, it's inevitable. As long as you're living with humans, or if you live with a non-human, that'd be even worse. But if you're living with humans, the thing is, we all have expectations. Like, coming in today, you had expectations of what this four-hour training would be like, right? Maybe you've been to something else. I know one or two of you came up and said, I was at Journey. So maybe your expectation is this is going to be a lot like our Journey training that I do every year, which is a four-day personal growth and development. Other people have never been to Journey, so your expectation would obviously be significantly different than that. Other people maybe have never met me before at all, so you may have a expectation that I'm going to use PowerPoints and be like a college professor. See, the deal is, if that's your perception and I don't meet your perception, then we get frustrated. Okay, so a part of what we need to understand is when you're interacting with other people and you are getting upset, just understand it's just because your expectations aren't met. Now, let me ask you a question. I'm talking about a group situation right now, but if I'm in a one-on-one situation, let's say I'm in a relationship with someone, and let's say the weekend is coming up, and I've been working really, 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 really hard all week, and you've been working really, really, really hard all week. And I remember back in the day when I was like 24, 25, 26, a lot of times I'd like to go play ball with my buddies. It was just a good way to release and hang out with my friends and have a couple beers afterwards. And, you know, I remember a couple times being in relationships with the young ladies, and I'd go, okay, so Friday night after work, I'm going to go out with my friends, play some hoops, and you know, then go have a couple beers, and then, you know, we can hang out on Saturday and Sunday. And I remember getting less than an enthusiastic response. But again, it's funny how people don't communicate very effectively. And in my mind, I'm like, what is she complaining about? I'm not going out like some of my friends are to places that you wouldn't want your boyfriend going to. I'm going to play ball with my buddies. You know what I mean? Like, I'm innocent over here. Like, I'm just trying to have some good, clean fun. Give me a break. But what I now realize is her expectation of what was going to happen on Friday night was significantly different than my expectation. So a lot of times it's important that we let people we're working with, let people that we're in relationship with, let them know, express our expectations about things. Like, my daughter right now has gone to college. My oldest daughter just went to the University of Alabama. And it's very interesting coming into life has changed dramatically. Not only is she going to college, but now she has a boyfriend. And she never had a boyfriend until like her last month of high school. So now, like, the boy, talk about the landscape changing dramatically. So now I know what my expectations are. As a family, we've always like looked forward to holiday breaks that we would go and do things, just my two daughters and my wife and I. And for whatever reason, my daughters seem to think that my wife and I are kind of cool, so they like hanging out with us. So instead of hanging out with their friends during a whole break, a lot of times they're like, can we go do this or can we go do that? So I was like, hey, let's go to New York. Oh my God, I'm going to get a hotel room between Christmas and New York. It'll be awesome. My family loves New York. We'll go to plays. We'll go to restaurants. That would have sold like crazy for the last 7 or 8 years. But then my wife is like, well, just remember, Alex has her boyfriend now, and she's going to be back from spring break, and he's going to be back, for Christmas break. And so she may have a completely different expectation of what's going to happen there. So we're going to end up going to New York, but I asked her what she expected and wanted to do over the break. Does that make sense? And if I hadn't, you could see where me forcing my issue could have caused a problem one way or the other. So the thing I came up with is you have an expectation, and then there's an alteration, okay? A lot of times our expectations get altered, and when our expectations are altered, have an alteration, you could do one of two things. You can get real upset about it, or you can just say, okay, let me see where this door leads. Okay? And that's an interesting thing to do, because I got news for you. This is one of my favorite things. If people would get this one concept right, most of their lives would change dramatically. Okay? And that concept is, it's a question. Actually, I ask the question two different ways. Do you want to be right, or do you want to be happy? Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And do you want to be right or do you want to be rich? And it is amazing to me how many people have to be right. They always have to be right because as a human, we have this massive need for significance. We want people to think we're smart. We want them to like us. And many people want it to be done their way. There's an amazing book that I recommend to people all the time if you're into business for sure called Tribal Leadership. I'm going to talk a bit about this book at The View. And in tribal leadership, there are five stages of mindset and awareness according to this book. This is a pretty cool concept. The first stage is life sucks. Life just sucks. That's the first type of person. Everything sucks. Everyone's life sucks. World sucks, okay? Second, you grow out of that to the next phase. Believe it or not, this is growth, which is hard to believe. Into phase two is my life sucks. And the reason why that's an advancement is there's acknowledgement that other people's lives don't suck. Some people have a decent life, just mine really stinks. Now, there's a lot of people that live in really disadvantaged neighborhoods, and they just grow up under really difficult circumstances. And there's a certain, there's a relatively significant percentage of the population that live with either life sucks or my life sucks. Then there's a pretty big quantum leap to the third phase, which is I'm great. Okay, now if you think of almost every self-help book ever written, it's all about I'm great. I'm going to work harder than everybody else. I'm going to outwork them. I'm going to get more schooling. I'm going to listen to more tapes. I'm going to, if it's about going to the gym, I'm going to do more sit-ups than everybody else. I'm going to spend more time on the treadmill. And it's a way to separate yourself from everybody else. I'm great. If you read any of Donald Trump's books, it's all about I'm great. I'm better than everybody else. Here's how you can be better than everybody else. Kiyosaki, almost all the self-help books are about converting you to the I'm great mindset, which is a lot better than my life sucks. Would you agree with that? So that is a big, 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 big leap, but it's still I'm great. Now, if we're at work and we're in a big company and we're trying to be a great company, and the vast majority of the people in the company have a mindset of I'm great, you'll see what I'm talking about. It's like, well, no, it's not my idea, so therefore we're not going to do it. It has to be my idea. Even if it, and again, if some of you are honest with yourself, you'll admit there's times where someone, it could be your family member, it could be someone at work, someone has a better thought or idea than you, but it's not your idea and it pisses you off that they thought of it, so you say you don't like it, even though in reality you love it. It's just the way it is. Then in the book, you graduate to the fourth phase, which is much better, which is not I'm great, but we're great. It's a big difference. We're great is, again, I don't care whose idea it is, as long as it helps us move forward, that's awesome. We as a group. Now, that could be our family. It could be our neighborhood. It could be our division at work. It could be my sales team. It could be our company. But if you think about it, I'm great and we're great. They're much better than the first two. But the one thing they definitely have is an element of competition. I'm not saying that that's necessarily a bad thing in every case. But the point is, I'm great, you're not, or we're great, you're not. It's always about we're better than somebody else. The fifth stage, which they claim very, very few companies or individuals ever get to, is life is great. Instead of life sucks, life is great. So when we go to work, we're not trying to be, like, for example, they cite Apple as an example, as one of the companies. They were not trying to be better than Microsoft or be better than the PC. They were trying to, I don't know if you know or if you read this book, but Steven Jobs' quote over and over again to his people was, let's make a dent in the universe. Let's make a dent in the universe. Let's be so good they can't ignore us. Let's do something that changes life on the planet. Now, that had not, and one of the reasons he got kicked out the first time around is because he didn't care about profit, which the board of directors found very disturbing. You know, it's like, it was all about making the most outrageous, what do you say? We have to make insanely great products. Insanely great products that are better than anything anyone's ever had. And again, as sad as it is, a lot of the board members were like, yeah, well, why don't we make it great, but not insanely great? Let's take, instead of getting this part, let's buy it over there because it's cheaper. And instead of having this processor, let's have that one. And do we, you know, and it's just, it's a difference in philosophy. So again, that fifth generation is where, or fifth way of thinking is how people have massive breakthroughs, because it's not, I'm not trying to be better than anyone else. I'm just trying to, life is great. Everything is awesome. I love everyone. I don't care what team you're from. I don't care what your skin color is. I don't care what religion you are. Everything's great. I accept everyone. Let's go have fun and let's do something spectacular. And again, the majority of this is more aimed at a business mindset than it is aimed at an individual, but obviously some of the stuff overlaps to sell the least. So again, go back to what I was sharing with you about expectations and alterations. So when your expectations are altered, do you immediately get angry about the alteration because it wasn't your thought? Does that make sense? Because I got to tell you, when I shifted my way of thinking on this, it's remarkable how sometimes the alterations that I wouldn't have made myself were way better than what my original expectations were. Because usually if you have an expectation and there's an alteration, there's possibility for the final stage, which is a revelation, where you learn something dramatically different than you wouldn't have learned. But again, do you want to be right? Because if you want to be right, you're never going to listen to anybody else. It's all about you and your ideas, and you know, you just don't even want to hear what anybody else has to say. And I learned an expression a long time ago that all of us are a lot smarter than any one of us. Yeah, I mean, it's like, I'm fairly smart, but I know I'm definitely not as smart as Mike, Wayne, Dan, you know, all the executives in the World Ventures Company combined. So if I have something that I feel I'm 100% right about, but eight other people that are at least of my intelligence level or higher all think I'm wrong, I'm willing enough to alter my belief to go along with what a bunch of other bright people think. And in number of cases, their alterations of my expectations have led to revelations on my part that have helped me grow and get better and all that kind of good stuff. So I guess I'm just saying that I really encourage you to be as open-minded as you possibly can, and also understand that sometimes knowledge can be a tricky thing, because when we learn something, we just get really set in our ways, our beliefs. You follow what I'm saying? Like a lot of people, let's talk about this for a minute. When do most people form their beliefs? And if you do have a belief, how many of you are going to stick to that belief come hell or high water, no matter what? So, for example, an easy way to do this is to talk about religion. As a public speaker, you're never going to supposed to talk about religion, sex, or politics. So I try to hit all three constantly. So with religion, you have some people in the world that are Christians. There's a lot of Christians. And most Christians are Christians because when they were young, they were taught Judaism, Christianity, Muslim religion, Buddhism, all that stuff. And then the majority of people said, I've studied it all and I've decided to be a Christian. That's the way it worked, right? How about the people that are Buddhists? They do the same thing, right? They study all world religions and they go Buddhist. And the people that are Muslims study all world religions and then go Muslim. And certainly the Jews do the same thing, right? Or how many of you realize, like for in my example, I grew up across the street from a place called the Rectory, which is where priests live. Okay, and beyond one street away from the rectory was the church, and then across the street from the church was the school. So I was Catholic. I was an itty-bitty kid. They baptized me. I didn't even know what the hell was going on when I got baptized. I was like a couple of months old, you know what I mean? And that's a different subject for debate. But the point is, a lot of people think you shouldn't get baptized until you're old enough to know what you're doing and do it yourself. But anyway, I don't want to go there. I'm just saying that I was Christian just because I heard that story first and I bought into it, and that's the way it was. Now, I'm still a Christian, so I still believe it, but do you follow what I'm saying? That's an example of if you were brought up, if someone else, when I was in Israel, I spent a bunch of time with Jewish people. I went to their house for Shabbat. I don't know if you know what Jewish people, this is so cool. Real religious Jews on Friday at sundown stop everything. I mean, I'm talking everything. They won't drive a car. They won't nothing. They just spend all their time with their family, and they spend time praising God and being with their family and having fellowship. And they do it from sundown on Friday until sunset. No, until sundown on Saturday. So from sundown Friday till sundown Saturday, that's it. That's all you do. And I was like, wow, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Like, but again, how many Christians are like, oh, the Jews don't know what they're doing. They have no idea. They don't believe in Jesus. They're out in their minds. But when you think about it, Jesus was a Jew. Just saying, Jesus, kind of the main guy, was a Jew. So I'm just saying that there must be some level of value there. So when I looked at it, it shifted my belief a little. It didn't shift me to becoming Jewish, but it shifted me to having a 24-hour prayer, because as a Christian, going to church for an hour every week, really, an hour? Oh, my Lord. Where these guys are spending 24 hours, I thought it was way different. And if you've ever been around, I have a lot of Jewish friends growing back up on the East Coast around New York, New Jersey, and a lot of times Jewish families are much closer than non-Jewish families, but ding, they spend 24 hours a day with no one but their family. I mean, that's a clue, you know what I mean? Where a lot of other people, they're lucky if you get all four or five family members together for 8 minutes during the course of the entire week. So it's just an interesting thing to learn. But get my point. That's one example. I want to get off religion because I know I'm triggering some of you. So let's go to politics. Especially right now. This is a great time to talk about politics. So again, there's some people. I remember when I was a kid, my dad came home. I know it was 1968. I would have never known it was 1968, but my dad came home and he was talking to my mom. And for all I know, looking back on it now as an adult, my dad was probably out having a couple drinks with his buddies. And he came home and he said, you know, I was talking to the guys and, you know, we've got to vote for Richard Nixon, Hubert Humphrey this and that, and the Democrats. All I remember was Nixon was the guy. Now, I was 8, you know what I mean? I didn't know any of the other candidates running. I remembered the name Hubert Humphrey, who knew they would name a dome after him years later in Minnesota. But I'm just saying that's all I knew was Richard Nixon was the man, and my dad said to be a Republican, so there you go. Now, years later, I was Republican, and someone said to a girl I was dating, she goes, why are you a Republican? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, because they're best, because they're right. She's like, well, have you ever really looked at the difference? I'm like, of course. I think, maybe. So, you know, again, the point, I'm not going to tell you which way I lean now, because then half of you will be angry at me. But the point is that I looked at both sides thoroughly. And that's a lot of us choose our beliefs, or our beliefs are dumped on us without us ever choosing them. And sometimes when we do journey, we actually go through like an hour and a half long process and have you go through a bunch of the major beliefs that we have in life and try to figure out where they came from. Because usually someone you looked up to when you were younger influenced that belief. But the point is, again, you want to be right or do you want to be happy? There's people who get into vicious fights over this stuff. I mean, forget about vicious fights with the religion thing. There's been more people who died in the history of the world over religion than anything else, even though one of the five slamming ideas is thou shalt not kill, which is kind of ironic. But again, it's not 10 slamming ideas, they're commandments. So that is a little ironic, but you get my point. It's like people really get dug in on what they believe in, and I'm just sharing with you to be in constant learning mode. You know what I mean? Another thing that's really great, which I didn't do my first 42 years of my life, I traveled a lot in the United States. Actually, my first 20 years, I didn't travel at all. I thought the universe was in New Jersey, which is a terrifying thought. Not that there's anything wrong with New Jersey, but I found out there's many other areas outside of the Meadowlands. So I've traveled outside and, you know, New York and New Jersey. And granted, being that close to New York City and being able to go in New York all the time, there's quite a bit to do in New York. So I could, you know, I didn't have a lot of need or desire to go elsewhere. But then I started traveling all over the United States like crazy because of business. And I got to see all these wonderful places in the country. And we have so many amazing places. And it was really fun to see how completely different people, like, for example, in Seattle or Oregon, that area are compared to New York, or, you know, people in Alabama compared to New York, anywhere compared to New York, except Philadelphia. Philadelphia is even more intense than New York. New Yorkers are afraid of Philly people. And if you're from Philly, I'm not insulting you. I'm saying you're even tougher than New Yorkers, which is not a simple thing to be able to achieve. But then after all that, I started traveling internationally in the last 5, 6, 7 years. And man, you want to talk about expanding your mind. I mean, I would have never known about the Shabbat stuff if I wasn't in Israel. You know what I mean? And I forget what the quote is, but it's like the something to the key to understanding and harmony or humanity, you know, man getting along with man. And when they say that, I'm sure they mean women too, is travel. You know what I mean? Because when you don't travel, you a lot of times we become ignorant or biased. But when you meet other people that in your mind right now you hate, but then you meet them and you break bread with them and you get to see that they love their kids the same way we love our kids and so on and so forth, it really kind of shifts your perspective on a lot of different stuff. So anyway, the thing I was mostly trying to get across is don't go through your whole life trying to be right, okay? I'll give you a great example about being right or being rich. There was a guy who was on my team who was a big college football fan. Are any of you a big college football, like big college football fan, like a huge college football fan? And he was a UT, University of Texas, and this is going back 7, 8 years ago when Texas played USC and, you know, won the championship and all that kind of good stuff. So, I mean, he'd been sitting around waiting for UT to be this good for a long time, and now, like, they're dominating, and we were in Los Angeles doing business. I actually witnessed this with my own two eyes, which is mind-boggling that it was just one of those things that, have you ever seen something and you see it happen right in front of you, but even as it's happening, you're going, this is definitely impossible. This has to be a movie. There's no way, this can't be actually happening. So here's my friend Paul, who invested, I don't know, a bunch of money, opened an office, moved his family out to California from Texas, which was a big thing for him, obviously. And he went out there and he started doing business. He was trying to recruit and build a sales team. And, you know, he was having moderate success. And then this guy came in named Sean. Sean was a radio host who was living in Southern California and was a huge USC fan who played Texas in the, you know, in the final game and lost, you know. So huge, huge in the regard that he's friends with Pete Carroll, who's the coach of USC. As big of a USC fan as Paul is a UT fan. And he's a radio host. And at the time, he had a show that had about 3 million listeners. Now, if you're in a network marketing company and you're trying to build a team, what you're looking for is someone who has a lot of influence with a lot of people. Now, you know, now, a guy like Brad Pitt has a lot of influence with a lot of people. If Brad Pitt were to put on his Facebook page, hey, anyone want to go on a vacation with me, I bet a lot of people would say yes. Okay, but Brad Pitt is usually not looking for money, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, we don't have to worry about the odds of getting Brad. But a radio host, you know, a lot of times people on the radio don't get paid that much money. The radio companies do, but the DJs, even though in many cases they're the one attracting the following, unless you're like Howard Stern, is like insanely well paid. But other than him, there's not too many DJs that I know of in the world that make a whole bunch of money. So this guy wanted extra money, and he had 3 million people that he'd go on the radio all the time and talk to him about anything. So I'm like, hallelujah, my buddy Paul is finally going to have his business explode. So we're sitting there, and Sean is just getting started with the company, and he's excited, and we're sitting there and doing a game plan. And then he says something about the game. And Paul jumps in, and basically it was like 2 8-year-old kids saying, my team's better. And after a long story short, they were going back and forth, and I'm just going, this is a train wreck. Stop. Where's the mute button? Stop, freeze. You know, do we have a remote control? I've got to stop this and get Paul and like slam his head against the wall and wake him up. Like this, he's like basically alienating this guy from getting involved with him, arguing over college football. Oh my God. And when all was said and done, Paul had the final word and said, well, the bottom line is who won the game. You know what I mean? And you could just see this guy shift, and he's like, you know what? You're right. And he left. And he never did anything with the business. Nothing. Because Paul was right. So you want to be right or you want to be rich? Don't always. I remember one time I was sitting down doing, if we do trivia later, you want to go in the bar and do sports trivia? I am weird with sports trivia. I spent way too much of the first part of my life obviously having absolutely nothing to do. I clearly was not studying my regular subjects in class. So I know this ridiculous stuff. To give you an example, if you ever, there's a movie called Trouble with the Curve that came out last year. It's not a big movie. Clint Eastwood's in it and Amy Adams. And he's a baseball scout. And there's a certain point where Amy Adams grows up as the daughter of this baseball scout who's been in baseball for 40 years. And she's dating this guy, and he says he knows a lot about baseball. So she drills him with four trivia questions in a row. And I just watch the movie. They're so obscure, it's ridiculous. And I was sitting there with my wife, and I've always told her, it's like, just don't even try me with sports trivia. So we're sitting there watching a movie, and question one, boom, two. I just answered all four without even blinking. It was just ridiculous. I even said to myself, what is wrong with you? It's like, you ever watch Jeopardy? Like, it was like watching Jeopardy. Like, it's one thing, like, some of the answers, but they have these obscure, like, you know, rivers in the Congo. You know what I mean? Like, who would know the rivers? And they're like, they rattle off five of them in a row, and you're going, what? Who would know that? You know, like, what is wrong with you? That's how I am with sports trivia, especially from, like, the 60s to the 90s, and that, or, yeah, in that window. So we're sitting down, and we're talking about, we're hanging out after a business meeting, having a couple beers, bonding. The idea was to bond with my people and build relationship with my people so they like me more, so they do more. And we got into this whole thing about sports trivia, and this guy was saying, no, so-and-so hit this many home runs. I'm like, no, he didn't. He hit this many. And this is years ago, and I was stupid. And I'm like, no. But it was long enough ago where Google existed. So I was like, fine. I pulled out my phone, and I showed him. And there were eight people there, and I showed everyone that I was right and he was wrong. And that was the last time I ever saw the guy. Again, like, don't need to be right. You don't need to be right. You want to get crazy? Let other people be right. Even when you know they're wrong. It happens to me all the time now. Probably the hardest thing in the world for me to do. It happened just last week. I was somewhere. Oh, my God. It was so hard for me to do. I can't remember what this was, but, oh, God, I wish I could think of it. I think I was outside the United States somewhere. I think I was in London, and someone said this, and I knew they were wrong. I knew they were wrong. I was so 2,000% sure they were wrong, and I wanted to say, I was just there. And I went, wow, you know, I have a totally different perception than that, but you're probably right. Let people be right. It's definitely more fun. But I'm serious. When you do it, notice how good it makes people feel when they're right. Yeah, I mean, especially if you're just, it could only be a group of two or three people, but when you let people be right, you'd be amazed.